Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Paul Craig Roberts is my guest today. We've got lots to talk about. I want to stress that Paul is one of the distinguished contributors to the important book coming out in just a few weeks on Ukraine. It's titled Flashpoint in Ukraine, How the U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risk World War III. Well, Paul thinks the possibility is real. I think the possibility is real. Nobody can predict these kind of things, but the way things go, you know, small incidents lead to bigger incidents, to much bigger incidents, and these are the way great conflicts begin. It's how World War I began. It's how World War II began. If World War III begins, it may be the same way, and Ukraine may be ground zero for the flashpoint that ends up igniting it. Again, we don't know, but the conflict continues. And today, by the way, today is today celebrates the great Patriotic War victory. Let me put it that way. It's being celebrated across Russia. It's being celebrated across Ukraine. And on this day, the fascist Ukrainian military is out on the streets attacking people in a number of cities. I mean, there are thousands of people in cities around Ukraine. Let's just concentrate in eastern Ukraine for a moment. In eastern Ukraine, in a number of cities, in many cities, and fascist troops are attacking these people. Innocent people are in harm's way. We have no idea how many people may end up being killed before the day is over. They're out celebrating the great victory, the great patriotic war. On this day, vicious attacks will launch. Paul, you know, it's really unconscionable to launch these attacks anyway, but to do it on a day of celebration, it's like the U.S. Army attacking celebrants on the 4th of July.
Oh, they will be before long.
They probably will be, indeed. Well, Ukraine certainly is the big story, Paul, and you've written some important things about it. You've got important material in the book, vitally important material. You talk about the threat of heading for World War III.
Yes, anytime you take a direct strategic threat to the backyard of a major military power, you do risk that. They can't really accept it. There's so much speculation about it all and about Putin and what he's going to do. I think on the whole, he's a lot smarter than anybody we've got. And the way I look at it, there are two explanations that could be right. One is he's just letting the European puppet states of the United States see that the cause of violence is the American stooge government, you know, the government that Victoria Nuland and the Obama people stuck in Kiev. He's letting Europe see that these are right-wing Nazi people who are out murdering people. So that makes it harder and harder for Europe to accept all the American lies, since the war in the Ukraine doesn't serve any European purpose. And so it could be that the result breaks some of the NATO countries off from the United States. So that's worth trying out, and that may be what he's trying out. He may end up with a hobbled NATO or a NATO with fewer members, or even the whole breakup of a thing. Imagine what would happen if Germany left. So I think it's going to cause a lot of political troubles within Europe and not within Russia. And there doesn't seem to be much that Washington can do about it. The Ukrainian military appears to be not very potent or very reliable, and most of the violence against these protesting cities has come from these right-wing paramilitary forces that are self-organized. So I think that Putin is letting the West reveal what it really is. And that's not a bad strategy.
I think very possibly he's doing that, Paul, and I don't think he really wants to send Russian forces into Ukraine even to protect people. I think if really things got to the bloodbath stage, maybe he would have to do something, but first he will go to the Security Council, maybe even go to the General Assembly, get some sort of worldwide consensus or consensus beyond Russia to do something to protect innocent people that are being murdered. And I think the possibility is very real that before this thing ends, it's very early in the attacks on the eastern cities, before this thing ends, we really could see a bloodbath.
Well, the protesters themselves could conceivably organize better than the Kiev mercenaries and put the whole thing down by themselves. That's entirely possible. But I don't think that the Americans will outsmart Putin. And in the meantime, other things are happening that could very much affect the outcome there. For example, we now know in the first quarter of this current year that the United States GDP growth was negative. The official report initially was that the economy grew by 0.1%, but that was using the rigged inflation measure that everyone knows is a gross understatement. I would say that depending on which of John Williams' inflation measures you use, the one based on the 1990 official methodology or the one based on the 1980 official methodology, you've got inflation somewhere between 4-5% and 9-10%. And what that would mean is if we had a 4-5% or 9-10% negative GDP growth the first quarter. Now, they've tried to say, oh, this is all due to snow in the winter, but we've just now had the inventory report come in for March, and they're growing. They're rising. And I think this is the third month in a row that unsold inventories are rising. And, of course, we do know there are no jobs. People have no growth in their real income. So it could well be that by July 1st, we are again in recession, officially. In recession. Of course, in my opinion, we've been in one ever since 2008. We've never come out of it. They produce phony numbers that makes it look like you're out of it, but most people are still experiencing recession and rising inflation. There's been a huge rise in food prices, and of course, gasoline prices are now way back up, energy prices. So the American economy is going to be struggling. And that means that the pretense of having reduced the deficit by all sorts of planned cuts that will never happen, that will disappear because as the economy's GDP projection falls, the deficit rises. So they'll be again with a debt problem, a debt ceiling problem, financing problem, and the sword that's hanging over the head of the United States is the dollar. How long can the Fed continue to print money to finance the federal government and to finance and to support the balance sheets of the big banks before the dollar simply goes south in some major way? Now that would be equivalent to being defeated in war, for the dollar to collapse on them. And so the whole power structure of the United States and the Western world, which depends on the dollar, fooling people longer about the dollar, that could radically change this year. If that's the case, and of course what's going to happen to Ukraine if these various IMF programs and things go through, those people are going to be looted, pillaged. They're already in serious difficulties. It'll get twice as bad. And I don't think there'll be any support for the stooge government in Kiev. And since it's not well armed or provided with any kind of formidable military or police capabilities, the whole thing could collapse. And it may just be that Putin is just waiting for it to
Paul, a couple of comments. I'm looking at John Williams' website right now, Shadow Stats. Anybody can access it, Shadow Stats. The hoopla over the big April employment number, well, we'll see what the revisions are. But his comment, I'm not one of his subscribers, but his comment very brief says, April unemployment numbers showed deepening economic disaster. And, one of the big figures was over 800,000 people dropped out of the workforce because they couldn't find work. A second point I just wanted to make, which is very big, and you commented about this in at least one of your articles. I think the best strategy for Russia to counteract the U.S. sanctions, mainly the European ones, really haven't amounted to very much. The U.S. ones are a little stiffer and maybe tougher ones will come. The best strategy is to attack the dollar, as you discussed, and do it by a bilateral trade in rubles and the currencies of other countries, with China, I think, increasingly is coming with the renminbi. Do that kind of thing and get out from the dollar, attack the dollar, weaken the dollar, weaken the petrodollar. I can't think of a better way to weaken America.
Well, I think it will happen because of all the threats of sanctions. If you're not in the dollar payment system, then the sanctions don't mean anything. So where Russia and China made their fundamental strategic errors was participating in the dollar payment system in the first place. It was really a stupid thing for them to do because, they wanted to be accepted in the West and be part of the world economy, and they had no comprehension that they were viewed by Washington as potential rivals whose rise had to be blocked. That's the Wolfowitz doctrine, that the United States can permit no other country to rise that could in any way pose a check on American power. So they, both of these countries have learned their mistake, and now I think they're trying to get out of this dollar payment system. And that will adversely affect the exchange value of the dollar. So it may well be that the House of Cards, which is the United States economy, title of one of my recent columns, the House of Cards can't stand much longer. And in that case, Washington won't have any energy for the Ukraine. And the situation will be so bad, both in the U.S. and in Europe and in the Ukraine, that that Putin or the Russian government will have a free hand. So I think we don't really need, the only thing we need to, continue to remind people is that this whole crisis was caused by Washington, and that this Victoria Nuland is a war criminal. All these deaths are her fault. And if Europe had any gumption or any integrity or any morality, they would issue International Criminal Court charges for Victoria Nuland. She's a war criminal. She's murdered people. She's responsible for this. And they could go further and deliver the same summons to Kerry and Obama. But this won't happen because the NATO countries are bought and paid for, and until they see their own national interests hurt by the by Washington's policy toward Russia, for example, sanctions that might make it impossible for them to get their natural gas, which would cut German industry off from a third of its supplies. I mean, this would be devastating for the German economy, and at that point, it becomes hard for Merkel to continue to support crazy U.S. policies. So I don't think this is going to work out for the United States. And you have to remember, too, Stephen, that 20 years ago when Washington pulled this, it was Serbia. And at the time, the Russian government was very upset about it, very much opposed to it, but in a much weaker position and couldn't actually do anything about the rape, looting, and murder of Serbia by the United States government. But they have, in the 20 years, prepared themselves to be a much stronger position, and I don't think they're going to permit that again.
Paul, I wrote about the meeting that Merkel had with Obama in Washington some days back. It was a Friday. It might have been a week ago today. I forget the exact date. I think it was a week ago today. And I stressed in the article that German industry is absolutely opposed to the sanctions. And, you know, they don't care about denying visas or stuff like that. But anything that hits their bottom line, they're absolutely against it. The biggest industries in Germany, I mean, Germany does an awful lot of business with Russia. Thousands of German companies are involved in this, not just the big ones, but small ones. And a leader like Merkel absolutely can't disregard their concerns, and she won't. So she can come to Washington and she can make public statements sounding supportive of Obama, but behind the scenes she's telling him, there's no way we're going to do anything to harm the economic interests of Germany or the business interests of these companies. So it's not going to happen. So, and it's the same thing across Europe to a lesser extent. The big difference in Germany is the big German companies are going public saying this. But even in America, U.S. corporations are very upset about anything that would harm their business with Russia. And it's very minor compared to the European business. It's a fraction of what European businesses do. And it's not just Germany. It's other European countries. And business interests don't want these tough sanctions. I don't think they're going to come. I think the sanctions will fall flat, Paul.
Well, I think we agree that the sanctions would have far more effect, deleterious effect on Germany and Western Europe than on Russia. And so, in a way, they would be self-defeating. We would be hurting our own strength, not Russia's. So I agree that the sanctions don't mean anything when you put them on individuals, because it only affects the foreign bank account of the individuals, and members of the Russian government are not permitted foreign bank accounts. So the sanctions are just some kind of face-saving thing for the idiot American media to talk about.
There were some Russian officials, Paul, after the first round of U.S. sanctions, complaining to Washington, why were they left off the sanctions list? I mean, yeah. They were laughing them off as meaningless. Why weren't their names included? So when more names are included, again, it's very meaningless. It doesn't affect any bank accounts, visas. You know, who cares if they go to Washington or not? It's a gesture. You start going after businesses, it's a different story. Washington may do it, but again, they're not going to get much European support on this.
No, and of course, probably the main thing that's going on now in Washington's calculus is, we got to keep the military security complex fed, having lost all the wars in the Middle East and having been blocked from attacking Syria and Iran. We got to get some other way to spend money on Halliburton and Boeing and all the military industries so they keep funding our reelection campaigns. And so thrust is to beef up military spending and forces in Eastern Europe. So they're going to try to have a new Cold War, but of course Eastern Europe hadn't got any money to pay for any of that, and neither does Western Europe. They're all struggling, and if my own expectations of the state of the economy and John Williams' expectations are anywhere near the mark, Washington's not going to have any money either. And so I think that this whole thing may be the turning point in the empire. It's about to have reached its peak and popped out and not be able to take any further forward steps. And we will then watch the rise of China and Russia and perhaps India and Brazil. So it could well be we're in a transition period in which American power has peaked and is going to roll back and fall away, and that Washington will have so many internal problems that it simply can't cope with trying to run the foreign affairs of the world. You know, I thought it was very interesting. I saw where the German parliament, the members of the legislative body in Germany, are determined to have Edward Snowden testify about NSA spying in Germany. And that the Merkel government is doing everything they can to block this, and that Merkel herself. You know, I call her Washington's whore. Merkel herself told the parliament, you can't possibly let him testify. It'll ruin our relations with Washington. In other words, what the silly woman did, she told the German legislative body that our relations with Washington are more important than whether or not we're being spied on by Washington.
And she personally.
Well, I don't think that's left her in a very good position. I think that you're going to see more and more opposition rising within Germany to her, which will make it harder and harder for her to even get, you know, pretend that she's supporting sanctions or American actions in Ukraine. But just imagine, I mean, that's an extraordinary thing to say that, we mustn't find out what the Americans are doing to us. It'll ruin our relations with them.
I know she's trying very, very hard to downplay it. And at the time, she at least publicly expressed great outrage. Even her personal cell phone that was supposed to be hack-free, I guess. I mean, a head of state ought to have a cell phone that has some kind of encryption or some kind of protection to keep people from hacking into it. But the NSA had no trouble doing it, listening to her personal phone calls. I mean, I'm sure they may listen to mine, maybe yours as well, Paul. Well, all I have to do is listen to this program to know how you and I feel. They don't have to listen to our phone calls or read our emails, but you have relations with Washington more important than the fact that a close ally is spying and watching everything you do and putting U.S. corporations up against German business. That doesn't matter. Just keep good relations with Washington.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a politically untenable position for the Chancellor of Germany to take, particularly when there are opposition parties and there is something of an opposition press, and of course the Germans themselves are probably fed up with Americans. So, I don't know, I think that this was a fundamental error on the part of the United States. It reflects the arrogance and the hubris that always leads to downfall. And so the coup engineered by Victoria Nuland in Ukraine may go down in history books as the turning point on the collapse of American power.
Paul, that very much is on my mind, and every time that topic comes up, I think back to Chalmers Johnson, who died a few years ago, very sadly. I was lucky to have him once on another program I hosted, and when I went back to reschedule him, I couldn't do it. He said he wasn't well, but I had no idea just how bad shape he was in, and very sadly, when he passed away, it was a great loss. He used the term overstretch. And he saw America going the same way as Rome unless major, major changes could be made. It was too late for minor fixes. The stuff that's gone wrong is so great. I mean, you need a complete makeover. And he talked about the term, again, the main term, overstretch and the end of democracy. And literally, this is the path it's on. And things are worse now than a few years ago when he wrote about his great trilogy. I read his three books, and I wrote about one of them. And I wish he was still alive today. We could use him. I should get him on this program.
Oh, yeah, sure. All those kinds of voices are very important, and I'm not sure they're being replaced. And it's probably impossible for anybody like that to exist in the university position today or in any kind of major print or TV media position. You know, even Seymour Hersh is now having trouble getting his investigative articles published. He has to now take them to London, to the London Review of Books and things like that. And so I think the voices that we've had in the past, as they die out, they're going to be hard to replace. It's just, and that just leaves the country more in the dark, more ignorant, more unaware, and therefore more susceptible to major blunders and major mistakes.
And Paul, at the same time, the internet is being attacked, and I fear greatly that the great voice that we have online, that efforts will be made as we grow in importance, like PRN gaining new listeners all the time, as we grow in importance and subscribers to major publications and viewers of TV news, as they decline, well, going to go after us, Paul, and I fear that greatly. That really is the final act of silencing dissent, silencing truth, and that's the great battle I see coming. And Obama, who as a campaign pledge, promised to support the free and open internet, he's literally waging war on it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. They can't. You know, it's like George Orwell said. You know. To tell the truth is a revolutionary act.
Sure is.
So, but I suspect people will find some way to continue doing it, and I suspect also we're going to see new internet systems rise up elsewhere, independent of the American thing. I mean, why in the world should Brazil or Russia or China be dependent on American internet companies or Google or any of that? So I think you'll see that other parts of the world just create their own systems. Now, whether Russia can keep us off of them, I don't know. I don't know enough about the technology.
Oh, yeah, I don't know either, Paul. It's a struggle that we have to win. This is the way we get our information out, and if we could only attract many more readers, viewers, listeners, that would be wonderful. If enough people knew what was going on, a whole major change would happen. Way back over 100 years ago, I think Henry Ford talking about either the banking system or the whole financial system, saying something like if the American public knew a quarter of what was going on, we'd have a revolution in the morning. My God, that was then. I mean, I don't know what he'd say today, but things are so infinitely worse today than back in his day that what we need really is a revolution, a nonviolent revolution.
Well, that can happen unexpectedly, too.
We need people to resist. I call a resistance a universal right, and there have been great people in history and in American history who feel exactly the same way. If you don't challenge these people, then you get nothing done. You don't have to do it violently. You can do it all kinds of ways. My God, we got the Vietnam War stopped. We got labor rights at one time. We got civil rights. Of course, new wars replaced Vietnam. All the former gains were lost, but they can be regained if people go out and struggle for them again. It happened before in America. It sure can happen again. We've got about a minute or so left, Paul. Your final thoughts?
Well, I think for change, we might be able to be optimistic because clearly the original goal of the coup in the Ukraine failed. So Washington has had to try to retrieve some other goal out of it, such as starting up the Cold War. So I think the fact that they failed in the original goal, which was to evict Russia from the Black Sea Naval Base and seize the country quickly and stick it in NATO. And I think also the likely coming reduction in U.S. economic standing and power and standing of the dollar, this will also impact the influence and ability of Washington to carry out his machinations. So I think we can be more optimistic with these developments than we've been able to be previously in our conversation.
I never lose hope, Paul. I've got to wrap it up, but I agree. America may have really overstepped in Ukraine, and wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Paul, I look forward to getting you back next month for more important discussions. This is what you get in alternative media on PRN and in others. This is what you need to follow. Many, many thanks, Paul.
Look forward to speaking to you again.
We'll be on Sunday Live at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.